Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is From the Rookery End, a Watford podcast brought to you by The Athletic. It is Thursday and it's Adam Leventhal here to round up the key stories of the past week and point you in the direction of the coverage on The Athletic at the moment, which currently has the deal of the year on for new subscribers, just £1 per month for 12 months. All you need to do is go to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And if you've not taken the plunge yet, I strongly advise you to do it now because it is a really, really good deal. This is the time to do it. On the agenda on this episode, we're going to be reflecting on that wonderful 4-1 demolition job on Manchester United and the incremental improvements that we're seeing under Claudio Ranieri. We'll be digging into the finances. We'll be talking Zinchenagel as well and answering some of your questions as well. Dave and Mike are with me once again on the day that Watford announced that Elton John is going to be playing two concerts at Vicarage Road in July next year. Exciting times, Dave. Are you already ready? Are you already sort of getting ready with your spangly clothes?
I am very much ready. I'm already planning my strategy to try and get tickets. Seeing as I'm not a season ticket holder, I'll be in like the second group of people to be able to get tickets. And my mum has already messaged me several times, very anxious that I managed to get hold of a few tickets because she still lives in Watford, just around the corner from the stadium. So she could probably sit in the garden and hear it, actually.
Yeah,
you don't even need a ticket.
And Mike, you as well. I would have thought you're already there, aren't you?
Don't go breaking Cathcart. I cannot wait. I am actually genuinely super, super excited for this. I felt strangely emotional about it, actually. I was sort of being Elton's last tour, him being able to sort of be with the fans to almost celebrate last year, because he was there, wasn't he, to celebrate the promotion with the players, as we saw. But it feels like this is a real good chance for us to have a bit of a shindig with someone who's really important to us. So I can't wait.
The thing about the farewell tour is, God love him, Elton, we could probably get relegated and promoted again by the time it's over. It's stretching into like 2023, isn't it? I think people bought tickets years ago for this thing. Bless him.
Yeah. But it is great that he's going to be back at Vicarage Road. And it makes sense, doesn't it? Because there was always a little bit of uncertainty. Is it going to happen? Isn't it going to happen? And finally, to get it nailed down is really, really good news. And it will, I guess it will be probably an even better atmosphere, if that is possible, than after the victory over Manchester United at the weekend, which was brilliant. And obviously, you know, you guys, I listened to the podcast, the last one after that win, and it was great to sort of soak it all up, and the excitement and your voices as well, which were struggling after shouting so much. But it was a great performance. And I obviously then dug into it afterwards for The Athletic to just try and sort of analyse exactly what had happened. And I think one of the key things that I found, and I sort of compared what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had said and Claudio Ranieri had said, and they'd actually said very, very similar things. You know, we've been working on things in the international break, we've done well, and hopefully it will all kick on. And that's what they said prior to the game. But then only one of them, one of the head coaches or one of the managers, actually showed that the players essentially had been listening to what they'd been saying, because it was chalk and cheese between the two sides. And a lot of the attention will have been on, you know, Manchester United being architects of their own downfall and all that sort of stuff. But the way that Watford played and the work that they've been doing, especially in pressing, which is one of the key things that they've been doing a lot of during the international break, it really, really showed. And I spoke to Tom Cleverley after the game as well, and he spoke about the fact that they'd been sort of, Ranieri had been trying to sort of tap into their psychology a bit and building on the encouraging signs that we'd seen at the Emirates, even though they'd lost, and just trying to be more positive, more forward movement, attacking the space. And I'll get your guys' thoughts on it in a moment, but wasn't it great to see Imran Lusa playing like the player that we'd all imagined he was going to play? Deep-lying, perfect. Will Hughes' replacement, and he did his job really, really well. So overall, and you can read all about it in detail on The Athletic in that article, it just came together very, very well due to the hard work that they've been doing on the training pitch. Dave, do you concur?
Yeah, it's really good to see. Obviously, an amazing afternoon full of drama and you know, narrative in from every angle, really. It's been the biggest story of the week. You know, well, we set in motion the biggest story of the season, really. But very, very encouraging to see all of those things. And it does seem that now we're what, how many weeks are we into Ranieri's reign? Are we about 6 weeks into his reign, something like that? It seems a lot longer, really, break, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah. But we're finally seeing his, you know, some of his methods start to come to fruition a little bit more. We've talked about on numerous occasions about his record, most recently with Sampdoria in Italy, and how there was a big focus on pressing and they were very intense and they were one of the best pressing teams in Serie A for his time there. And we hadn't really seen that. We've seen little signs that it was happening in the first few games, but it's obviously something that it does take time, and the players need to take time to kind of learn the system together, because obviously it's a collective thing that everyone needs to be in harmony with. It's, you know, and some people might take to it quicker than others, so maybe you're waiting. The effectiveness is kind of waiting for maybe those who are slower to take to it to catch up. But it was obviously just a perfect storm of Ranieri's sort of focus and plans clicking into place on Saturday, but coming up against a team who are, you know, were just in a complete disarray and were completely shambolic, and, you know, all played out as we know it played out. But it's, as we'll talk about later on in the pod, it's a different challenge against Leicester. They're not in great shape themselves, but not quite as sort of badly disorganised as Manchester United were.
Ad, I'm glad to hear you say that Imran Lusa played well. Because I guess that's why we sold Will Hughes. Da, 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 da. But yeah, I think the pressing thing is exciting to me, because it felt like, I obviously wasn't there. I missed the game. That's probably why we won. The last home game I missed was another sort of instantly forgettable game. Watford 3, Liverpool 0. That was the last time.
Well, that's it, isn't it? That's it. You can't go again.
Well, I did say, if I half jokingly actually said, I'm going to set up a GoFundMe to keep me sort of put up in nice hotels when Watford have big games. I'll take one for the team, but you guys are going to have to pay for me to stay in nice hotels. But, and I am genuinely only half joking, but with the press, it sounded like, in reading the piece, Ad, it just felt like they were pressing, but also doing it in a much more tactically astute and planned way. And it struck me, watching the highlights back, which I have done on numerous occasions, that the press seemed to surprise Manchester United, and perhaps that tells its own story. Yes, Man United are in a bit of disarray, as Dave rightly says, but they will have watched Watford and probably thought, well, yeah, this is what they try to do, but they're not really managing to do it, because whilst there have been green shoots, they haven't been really that impressive so far. So I think the fact that they were able to press and to do it with that tenacity and backed up with a plan and some tactics. I like the phrase that you used in the piece about triggers, because that means it feels like it's planned. It feels like, right, if that happens, this happens. If that, then this. And that's what Watford have to do, especially when they're coming up against up against teams that are basically better than them. I always remember Troy Deeney telling us about how he didn't particularly get on with Matt Sarri, but his tactical approach to the game against Arsenal in the week leading up to it, he said, right, if this happens, do that. If he's there, you be there. And they sort of scratched their heads a little bit. And then when it came to the game at the Emirates, they were able to do it. And it feels like perhaps with all Claudio Ranieri's experience, with his attention to detail, which again comes through in the PSAD, it feels like perhaps it all clicked into place on Saturday. So it all comes together. And yes, Man United were in a poor shape. I thought Harry Maguire's sending off was petulant and poor. And I thought that probably summed up where they were at as a team. But we still had to deal with a team that is chock full of internationals and superstars. And they did it. And they did it in a way that felt like it was planned. And that plan came together, which was hugely, hugely encouraging. And it speaks to Claudio Ranieri having time with this squad, with this side. The other thing that I really, really liked in the piece ad was that line, we've got the ability, we need the application. And that really felt like the first time that we had both from start to finish.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think that, you know, now they need to build on it once again and show that is the benchmark. And it was interesting from Tom Cleverley when he said, you know, and, you know, have almost a nod to Matt Sarri that you mentioned there before, Mike, is that he said, like with any Italian coach that I've had, it's very structured. It's very black and white with and without the ball. And it's more the basics of football. And it's that joined up thinking. And one of the images that I enjoyed sort of going through the footage, you know, really, 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 really detailed. There's one still image where Harry Maguire, who basically played like a broken robot for the entire game and was sort of just falling apart in front of us, you know, he's obviously just about to be closed by Tom Cleverley, who sensed, you know, that trigger. And there's a ring of, you know, it's almost like a pincer grip around Tom Cleverley, sort of almost saying, look, we've got your back, you know, of Dennis, King, Sissoko, Lusa and Cucho. And that's the organisation that Watford want, and they now need to kick on with that. Obviously, what will be disruptive to that is the selection issues that Watford will have for the game against Leicester. And yeah. I think, you know, a lot of the questions that came in, and thank you very much for sending them in on Twitter, are, you know, what's going to happen with Ismaïla Sarr?
What do we know, Ed?
Well, at the moment, it's not looking great because there's clearly uncertainty. You know, the initial sort of prognosis at the game was, oh, he didn't have an ice pack on his knee. He was, you know, on the sidelines at the end of the game. It didn't look like he was, you know, particularly stricken. But I would have thought they would have done further assessments. And it's not looking likely at the moment that he's going to play against Leicester. But we'll get almost like a definitive answer from Claudio Ranieri tomorrow, because usually we would know by now because we'd be playing on Saturday and they would have had the press conference today on Thursday. But that extra day means that they've probably had an extra day just to assess it, see how he goes. And it might be that they think, right, if in any doubt, let's leave him out against Leicester and then hopefully he can be back against Chelsea and Manchester City. But yeah, at the moment it's uncertain.
That's interesting though, right? Like there's a strange conundrum there. In a way, I'd rather he played against Leicester. I'd rather they patched him up and put him out against Leicester, because the best will in the world, I know how well we played against Manchester United, but we ain't going to get any points against Chelsea and Manchester City, are we? So bench him for those ones if you want to give
him
a rest.
Well, you never know.
I know.
Against Chelsea, you know.
But I mean,
who knows?
They are
who
so knows? Good. I watched both of them last week, and they're just—it's a walk in the park for them at the moment. They're just such a cut above. Like Chelsea played Leicester, in fact, last Saturday, and it was just it was 3-0, but they scored three goals in the second half, which were all marginally correctly called offside by VAR. But basically, you know, the nature of the play meant that they could have easily been 6 or 7-0 up. They were so good, and you know, and we know that we just can't really ever lay a glove on Manchester City. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bit of a cliched old situation. Of course, you want your best players playing in every game, really. But the Leicester game is a big opportunity for us this weekend, I think, because they are not the team at the moment that they've been in the last few seasons. You know, they won the FA Cup last season. They've been twice, actually. They've blown the top four twice in the last two seasons when they probably should have finished in there. But they're obviously up there and playing really well and attracting a lot of admirers. They've got injury problems, and it just doesn't seem to be quite all hunky-dory there in terms of their team at the moment. And it's an opportunity for us to go to the King Power and get something, get a point at least, I think.
Yeah, there were some interesting quotes from Tielemans, I think it was, in the week, who used the phrase, sort of, we've been overachieving in the past couple of years, and yes, we're going to try and carry on doing that well. But that spoke to the feeling perhaps I thought it was quite telling. It spoke to how perhaps the players are feeling, that they're perhaps feeling the pressure of what's happened at the King Power over recent history. And everyone has sort of talked about them breaking into that top four almost as being an elite side, and whether that's sort of weighing a little bit heavy on them at the moment. For a player to say we've been overachieving, I thought was interesting. And I wondered if that did show a little crack and whether we might have more of a chance on Sunday than we might ordinarily have thought. So yeah, we're heading up there. Sorry, everyone. But yeah, I'm going.
Mike, that's just the sound of me logging onto Airbnb there for you. Just see if I can find you a quick mini break at the last minute.
Right. Well, look, yeah, even if you do turn up, there is still a chance. There is still a chance that Watford can get something at the King Power Stadium, because they've not been in good form. They've also got a game. You know, they're spinning the plates in terms of European football, playing in the Europa League on Thursday nights, which is also disruptive as well. You mentioned Tielemans there. He's a player that isn't going to be playing against Watford too. So fingers crossed for Sunday, and trying to build on that performance against Manchester United once again.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
So prior to the Manchester United victory, I think it's fair to say that there was a little bit of a kerfuffle on social media about a loan that had been taken out by Watford, and it was secured against Vicarage Road. And everyone just got a little bit worried about what that meant. What did it actually mean? And on the Saturday morning, I take it as the inspirational Saturday morning article that everyone got everyone in the mood for the Manchester United game, digging deep into the financial details. It was one that I enjoyed doing, because I did feel like it was almost needed, because there was a lot of uncertainty. And what I was able to find out, and you can read the article on The Athletic, it was a loan taken out by Macquarie, which I understand its value is £50 million, and they have to pay that off over 5 years. And yes, it is secured against the stadium, but previous loans and an overdraft, for example, which has also been cleared now, have been previously secured against the stadium. Now, if they'd taken on a £50 million debt in addition to the £70 million debt that they already had currently to existing lenders, then you'd be thinking, hang on a minute, this makes us look really, really fragile. But in the process of looking into the details, I also found out the fact that they have actually cleared an enormous amount of debt, £70 million worth. So they've replaced a £70 million debt with a £50 million debt, and they've done that in far more secure financial waters, because they are a Premier League team and they're guaranteed, you know, £100 million at least, even if it goes tits up at the end of the season. If they can stay up, they can budget for, you know, £200 million over the next two seasons. So they've done it in a more secure way. And by cleaning up the debt, I suppose is the best way of putting it, they've made themselves more attractive to any prospective investors. And we know that there are a lot out there. We've seen a similar situation at West Ham. They've taken on a minority shareholder, but with a decent stake. And that's something that Watford, and this hasn't really changed over the last couple of years. It's well known that Watford would take on a strategic partner that might then become a senior stakeholder in the club in the future. But at the moment, if they can say, right, well, we've taken out a £50 million loan, that could be either a loan partner or an actual real partner. And that loan debt could actually be replaced by some equity going in the other direction to a new investor. So I think at the moment, my reading of the situation is that it's not something to worry about, but it is worth looking at because we've seen previously when they have been relegated, they did get into some financial straits. That was highlighted by the FIFA arbitration panel, which highlighted that they did miss a couple of payments, interest payments and an actual stage payment on the Ismaïla Sarr transfer. So, I mean, it's all detailed in the article. But I think, you know, from my point of view, I did want to look into it because you do worry. But hopefully sort of come out of it and given some sort of confidence to fans that it's not too much to worry about. It's actually potentially going to put Watford in on a better financial footing in the near future.
There was a wonderful line by Matt Slater, I think it was, who said, the sun's been shining, so Watford have fixed the roof. And that immediately put my mind at rest, basically saying that, you know, Watford are, as you said, just then, as you say in the article, Watford are on a much sounder financial footing, and they've used the situation they're in to reduce the debt, which wasn't immediately obvious, was it? And I think what the thing that it's brought home to me is probably, to be perfectly frank, how little I know about the actual cost of running a football club, what the weekly, monthly, yearly costs are. Actually are for a Premier League club and a club like Watford. It was fascinating. There was the Business of Sport podcast on The Athletic, and they have, was it John Textor who's taken over, he's invested in Crystal Palace, and really worth listening to, really sort of articulate, interesting chat with a fascinating background and a real interesting insight into what life's actually like at Crystal Palace, another Premier League side whose revenue is limited by the size of the club. So well worth listening to in that regard.
He's exactly the sort of bloke that would end up investing in Watford. You know, if Gino wants to bring someone else in, it'll be a figure like that. It'll, you know, because it's not we're not going to be, unless something mad happens, we're not sort of club that will get bought out by a sovereign wealth fund, you know, by one of these mad sort of Middle East states or something like Newcastle. We're probably, if we are going to attract any investment, it'll be from, you know, maybe US or from another nation, but somebody with a lot of wealth, but not untold riches, but somebody with enough money that wants to get involved in something and try and grow that and make a return on that investment. And it'll be that sort of person. So it's worth listening to just to get a bit of an insight into the minds of the sort of people who operate in football and who are prepared to come into football clubs now and try and make some money and try and improve things.
Yeah, money and acumen, I think, is the key thing there. He was evidently incredibly switched on about the way that the world is moving in terms of technology and broadcasting and what the audience is like, what supporters want from their football club. So fascinating. Listen, but I think it was the actual figures. So I think it was £90 million, and I think he's got an 18%, something like that, stake in Crystal Palace. So that's almost a fifth of the club, and some pretty hefty influence for £90 million, which I haven't got down the back of the sofa, but doesn't strike me in the world of the Premier League and big business and football as that much, as ludicrous as that may be to say. And as I thought it through, I thought, well, come on, Mike, £90 million is £90 million, and it's an extraordinary amount of money. But I have this sort of, as a supporter, just this a sort of latent feeling that there's just loads of money in the Premier League and the figures are huge. And it made me realise I don't actually know what the running costs are. And in turn, as a supporter, what is our understanding and what is our expectation? Because one of the other things that John Textor said was that sustainability versus progress is something that all supporters want. But that they, by their very definition, are almost competing. And I think a light bulb went off in my mind that probably just to try and pay a little bit more attention to the actual costs and the realities of finance, because I think that can help inform my understanding of where Watford are as a club and where football is as a sport and an industry. And I think the reason that the take it down to brass tacks, the reason that there were people worried is because people care really deeply. And I think a lot of people ask the question, will you be looking into this? And I think we have done, and you have done, Ad. It's a really good explainer. And I think the answer is don't panic, but do take an interest and perhaps
I think
try
people
and weigh
are right
everything
to worry.
Up.
I think people are right yeah. to worry at the first sight of it, particularly because the stadium is mentioned, that the loan or whatever is leveraged against the stadium. Because that immediately just your mind quite naturally goes to the worst case scenario sometimes and thinks, well, what if it all goes tits up and we have to sell the stadium? And that is the sort of road that leads you down to somewhere you don't want to be, you know, maybe having to leave Vicarage Road. Or I mean, basically, that's kind of how clubs like Wimbledon got into trouble, and, you know, not owning your own place. And, you know, Charlton have had it in the past, and, you know, the Derby have had a situation recently with their stadium, and they've got points deductions all over the shop, and it ain't good. You know, you want to be owning your stadium as sort of a bare kind of minimum sort of thing for any sort of healthy, successful football club. So I think people are right to, like, raise alarm bells, but thankfully, Adam and Matt Slater and others at The Athletic, you've done the legwork, and it does seem that like we can rest easy for now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just a final point on this, it's important to remember, obviously, you know, as Matt said, you know, when the sun is shining, you can do good things, and it feels a lot easier to do it without the weight of relegation and real financial pressure on your shoulders. But a lot is dependent on what happens on the field and staying in the Premier League, yes, but also how your players perform. And Watford have shown previously that they do have that second pool of players at Udinese, which they can move players around and they can sell accordingly. But they also do have players very much defined as Watford players, like Ismail Assar, you know, like maybe Imran Luzer in the future, or Joshua King, or Emmanuel Dennis, or whoever it is, where they can actually go, well, this is our guarantee of filling a hole, financial hole, if we need to, if we are relegated. And they haven't cashed in on a few of those players as yet. So they've got that as a safety blanket too. But as long as they stay in the Premier League, things will be far easier, and they will be able to service a debt of £50 million over the course of 5 years far easier, as you would imagine. So if you do want to read the piece and you haven't quite caught up on that because something else pretty significant, let's be honest, happened on Saturday. It was brilliant, wasn't it? And we've already spoken about it. Do head on to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And if you haven't been part of The Athletic yet, do get stuck into this deal, because it is really a great deal to take advantage of. It's a Black Friday deal. It runs out on Monday. £1 per month for 12 months subscription. So get involved at theathletic.com/rookeryend.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Now, I wanted to deal with some of your questions in a moment's time, but I wanted to just update you on a piece that is dropping on The Athletic on Friday. And I managed to sort of crowbar into a social trip that I was going on in Nottingham, where I used to go to university, and one of my mates is a Nottingham Forest fan. I took him to Nottingham Forest against Luton Town, and I was all in as a Forest fan for that evening.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad to hear that, because when I saw you post a picture from the City Ground watching Luton, I thought, oh no. What's happened? Yeah. Is he cheating on us?
He's been turned.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh no. No, it was the perfect storm. The game was a bit rubbish, to be honest. It was 0-0, but thankfully, Brees Samba in goal. Brilliant goalkeeper, by the way, at Forest, saved a penalty, so Luton were all disappointed. So that was great to see. But I was able to keep an eye on Philipp Zinckernagel, and it was good to see him playing in a different coloured shirt and in a role that he considers himself to be far more suited to than the one that he was sort of crowbarred into when he was playing for Watford, which was basically as one of those two eights ahead of Will Hughes, who was playing as a six. And that wasn't really the role that he wanted to be playing in. He wanted to either be playing wide or, as he is now with Nottingham Forest, playing as a number 10. And although, you know, it's interesting watching someone play in a different position, but also play for a different quality of side. And Forest at the moment, they're not a great side. They haven't really got much quality in attacking positions. And I still sort of wait to see Zinckernagel being given an opportunity to play in an attacking position in a Watford shirt surrounded by better players. And I think that he would really sort of come to the fore in that. However, I was able to catch up with his dad, Torben Zinckernagel, and learn a little bit about his sort of family background and the way that he has sort of tracked his progress all the way from being a kid. And there's some nice pictures in the piece that I've dropped in, and it's all out on Friday on The Athletic. And you just get a bit more of an understanding from, you know, a familial perspective of, you know, when your son is abroad. You know, obviously he was playing for Bodø/Glimt, which is in Norway, which is already abroad from Denmark, his home. And now being away in England, so much has happened over the past year. And he's only been able to watch him online. He's not actually been able to watch him in the flesh, but he is actually heading over soon, because obviously now crowds are back. So that is good. So, yeah, enjoy that, because it's just a sort of a progress report on Zinckernagel, who's pretty much going to be sticking with Nottingham Forest, as I understand it, for the full season, and then we'll see where he is by next summer.
You mentioning that ad, watching him online, it brought me shuddering with the thought of just logging on to bloody Hornet Hive and watching some terrible midweek game last season.
I don't know where you get. What are you talking about, man? I logged on to watch the Watford Man United from a very, very nice hotel in Cornwall online on Saturday, and it was all rather splendid, mate. But what I was going to say about the piece was a really interesting line. It's more of a hypothetical question, just to leave dangling, perhaps. But there was a line from Philip's dad where he said that Forrest have talked to him a lot more about where he wants to play and have tried to do that as a together to work out where he's best suited. And it did strike me as to whether that would be possible, or even, you know, whether that would be possible at Watford, bearing in mind the model, you know, that Watford bring in a player on the basis that they're going to be this particular piece in the jigsaw, don't they? And so whether, having arrived at Watford, whether there ever is that opportunity to say, well, actually, you know, I prefer it playing deeper, playing whatever. And it just struck me as to whether that might be one of the more difficult things to manage of the Watford model. Perhaps just something to...
We've definitely seen it in the past, haven't we? seen it in the past with players who've come in and maybe wanted to play one position and got put in a different one. Jurado springs to mind in Kike's first season. Similar sort of player, really, I guess. But I've got a good friend of mine is a Nottingham Forest fan. I've been sort of keeping tabs on Zinka Nagel via him, and he's been very complimentary. He's been a real hit, I think, at the City Ground. I think the fans have really taken to him. He's had a real positive impact on that side. He's scored goals. He's got assists in decent numbers. I think he's doing well under the new manager as well. And they sacked Chris Hughton and replaced him with Steve Cooper. And I think he's enjoying that as well. And it's interesting, you know, my mate is sort of willing us to stay up because he's of the opinion, whether this is right or wrong, that if we get relegated, there's more chance that Zinka Nagel comes back. And I suppose that's probably a fair assumption. So the big question here is really, do we ever think we'll see the bloke in a Watford shirt again?
Another interesting line that you spoke to someone at Forest, Adam, I know, for the piece, and they said they want more from him. Dave, obviously, you've got the line from the terraces, which is glowing, but Forest are asking for more in terms of consistency. And the other thing is, bearing in mind what we spoke about last week in terms of peak age, he's 27 as well. So, you know, is he in his peak? Is he past his peak? Is he showing enough to be a Premier League midfielder and a Premier League midfielder that sort of gets to dictate where he plays? So lots of open-ended questions. Sorry, I'd interrupted.
No, not at all. I think that's the thing that is difficult for him, that initially when he came in at Watford, obviously his ideal position and where he'd been, you know, pulling up trees for Bodø/Glimt was playing on the right-hand side of a 4-2-3-1. And he was never going to get that opportunity at Watford. So he had to sort of be playing out of position. And then that was it. That was also in the Championship, which isn't, you know, it's a bit more of a wrestling match at times in that midfield area. So he's not had an opportunity yet to play in the, I don't know, maybe the sort of the cleaner sort of pastures of the Premier League, where it is a little bit more laid out at times tactically. And maybe he might have an opportunity to do that down the line if some spaces are freed up in that Watford attacking unit. But as I line it up in the piece, there's a hell of a lot of players competing for those attacking positions at the moment. So it's going to be very, very tough for him. But if it doesn't work out, you know, with going back to Watford, he's still going to have 4 years left on his contract. So Watford are actually in quite a strong position in terms of resale value or him going out on loan again, maybe with an option or whatever it is. So I think it's just going to be interesting to see how it all pans out. But the more goals, the more assists, you know, the more popular that he becomes at Nottingham Forest, it's of benefit to Watford, whatever the outcome. So we'll be watching it very, very closely indeed. I mean, he scored a great goal against Reading, by the way. Brilliant. Picking up on the left inside left position, cut in once on his shoulder, down, dropped his shoulder twice, finished right-footed into the bottom corner. It was a really good goal. So we've seen him doing what we were expecting him to be able to do at Watford, but he didn't really get the opportunity in the position that he wanted to be in. So you can read that piece out on Friday on The Athletic. There is also another piece that dropped earlier on this week, which sort of got, I guess, sort of overshadowed by everything that was going on at Manchester United with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being sacked. But Andy Mitten, my colleague at The Athletic, who covers Manchester United very closely, actually caught up with Etienne Capoue, and he spoke about his time, predominantly, you know, getting back up to the levels that he thinks he should be at, playing for Villarreal in Spain and, you know, winning the Europa League and all that sort of stuff. But he did also touch on his time at Watford and all basically feeling like, yeah, I shouldn't have been playing in the Championship and it was only a matter of time before I left. So
the headline of the piece, and it's probably the most interesting bit about it from a non-Watford perspective, the Watford stuff's interesting, but is that he doesn't watch football.
Yeah.
Never watches it.
No,
can't be arsed with it. He doesn't want it in his life. He wants football to be his job and his career, and he puts everything into that and whatever, and gets the instructions from the coaches on the opposition players and all that. But never sits down to watch a game.
No,
which begs the question: how does he know what level he should be at? he could be terrible if you never watch a game, mate.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true. I mean, that's always one that when you hear players say that, it does sort of make you think, he's not really that into it, is he? He's not really that. And let's be honest, he could do some amazing things on a football pitch, but there was always that thought in the back of my mind. I'm only speaking with my own opinion here, but I always thought if he played full throttle all the time, he would have been incredible.
It's a good and job, though, isn't it? You know, it's a good job that he doesn't. That he isn't a man that watches every football match going. Because if he was, I don't think he would have pitched up at Vicarage Road properly when he did.
In the first place. Yeah. That's very true. Very true. Now, look, there's a couple of questions that I wanted to just quickly deal with. Someone asked me about whether Troy Deeney was coming back for the Chelsea game. As I understand it, and I wrote about that when I caught up with Troy, he said that he was planning on coming back for the Chelsea game this next week. So look out for him at the game.
Is he coming back for the Elton gig? That's what I want to know.
I would have thought he could probably get on stage. He'll be there, don't you worry. I'm sure he will be. But then also, a lot of other questions. I've not done name checks, I'm sorry, but I just wanted to sort of scoot through as many as possible. A lot of people have asked, and this is with, you know, maybe Ismaïla Sarr in mind as well, what Watford are planning on doing for the Africa Cup of Nations. Now, I wrote a piece about that, just explaining all of the different situations and when teams are naming their squads and when they will have to check in, which is pretty much sort of December the 27th and all that sort of stuff, on The Athletic. So dig it out. Just search Africa Cup of Nations, Adam Leventhal, The Athletic, and that piece will pop up because it will explain a lot. And we will be waiting to see who those players are that are actually going to be going, because there is a little bit of a concern over Emmanuel Dennis. I'm hearing from one side, oh yeah, he's definitely not going. I'm hearing from the other side, oh, but we can't rule anyone out from selection. So that one's going to be...
He's playing his way in, isn't he?
Well, yeah, but we just almost want him to just I don't know.
Behind the sofa, I think, for the month of January.
Yeah,
Christ.
I don't know. But we will see. I think, I don't know how much sort of bargaining there can be done with international federations and things like that, but we will see. But yeah, just a quick reminder, if you haven't jumped on board with The Athletic, it's best to do it before this coming Monday and use the From the Rookery End link, which is theathletic.com/rookeryend, and then you'll get £1 per month for 12 months subscription for a new customers. So it would be great to have you on board, and you'll be able to read about everything that we've been talking about today and in the future as well. Gentlemen, it's been great having you on board. Mike, thank you very much.
Not at all. Just a quick one. Get well soon to Mum. She missed the Man United game on Saturday as well. She was due to do go there, but she's struggling a little bit.
Oh, we wish her all the best. We wish her all the very best, because we want her there when Watford play Bournemouth next season.
It was due to be Mum and Arlo there on Saturday, and that quite frankly would have been a terrifying prospect. They both get slightly aerated during Watford fixtures, so perhaps it's a good thing. It might have split Vicarage Road in two had they been there. So anyway, it's nothing serious, but just get well soon, Mum.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave as well, thank you very much.
Cheers, guys.
Nice one, everyone. Look, we will, fingers crossed, be looking back on the Leicester game in the next episode with as much positivity as we have been looking back on the Manchester United victory. That will be coming up in the next episode with John and the boys, and I will be back next Thursday.
Mike, you ever been to Hereford? I found you a cottage.
Book me in for 2 days.
I'll give you a call later.
Breakfast, please. Cheers, pal.
Take care, everyone. See you soon.
The Athletic.